From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at Centennial Hall at the University of Arizona in Tucson, Peter Sagal.
Yourselves. Oh, we're excited to see you too. We got a great show for you today. We got Joey Burns of the great Tucson band Calexico. He'll be here with us later. But first, I just want to say how pleased we were to come to Arizona and visit again. We had heard you guys weren't as welcoming to outsiders as you used to be. And then, wow, Governor Jan Brewer met our plane on the tarmac to welcome us personally. After she made sure all of us had our papers, of course. We don't require proof of citizenship. She'll give us a call. The number, 1-888-924-8924. That's 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. This is Gay France calling from Redondo Beach, California. How are you?
I'm fine. Gay France?
Yes.
Is there any other kind?
Is your middle name Paris?
No.
Who are you married to, Dower Britain? Well, welcome to the show, Gay. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to the man behind Esquire's politics blog and a contributor to Grantland. It's Mr. Charlie Pierce.
Hi, Charlie.
Hi, Gay.
Next, a contributor to CBS Sunday Morning and a co-host of the new WNYC podcast Relation Show, Faith Saley is here.
Hi, Gay.
And lastly, an author most recently of Alpha Better Juice, Mr. Roy Blunt Jr.
Hi, how are you doing, Gay?
Good.
Gay, we're going to start off with Who's Carl This Time? Carl Castle, of course, is going to recreate for you three quotations from the week's news. Your job: simply explain or identify two of them. Do that, you'll get Carl's voice on your voicemail. Ready to go?
I hope so.
Yeah, because now would be the time. You want to take a minute? Because we can wait.
Mm-hmm. I'm ready.
Okay, let's go. Here's your first quote.
I'm learning to say y'all, and I like grits. Strange things are happening to me.
That was someone who desperately tried to pander to voters in Mississippi and Alabama this week and failed to do so. Who was it?
Is that Mitt Romney?
It was Mitt Romney, yes. Now, I just want you to know, we here are as tired of Mitt Romney jokes as we're betting you are by this point, but apparently Mitt Romney cannot get enough of them. Because he keeps giving us more material. He went down to the South this week, and he tried to win over skeptical voters with a fake Southern accent. Hey, y'all. Who else courts people by doing a bad imitation of them? It turns out he asked his wife out for their first date by going up and saying, "Ooh, I'm a pretty girl. Look at me." Anyway, the good people of the South did not buy it. Both Alabama and Mississippi went to Rick Santorum. And Romney's team, they dealt with this loss. This is what they said. They said, it's no problem. We're going to make up. We're going to win delegates because we won the Northern Marianas Islands, Guam, the U.S. Virgin Islands, and American Samoa. They said that. That was their argument.
He's not going to be president, but he is going to be a volcano guy.
Yes. No, he does have an advantage there because those are all the islands where his money lives. Comedian Jeff Foxworthy endorsed Romney and campaigned with him. But what he was really doing was he was getting material for his hilarious new You Couldn't Possibly Be a Redneck routine. For example, you couldn't possibly be a redneck if your real first name is Willard.
But if you have $250 million and you wear jeans with creases in them, you might just be a Romney.
That's true.
They were all trying to outdo each other with their love of grits, weren't they?
Yeah, cheesy grits, he said. I never heard it called cheesy. It's cheese grits.
Right? Cheese grits.
Right. Cheese grits. Cheesy grits are grits that aren't so good.
All right, very good. Here's your next quote, Gay.
Today, if you make enough money for the firm and are not currently an axe murderer, you will be promoted into a position of influence.
That was from a very public resignation letter from one Greg Smith. He used a scathing op-ed in the New York Times to quit his job at what company?
Goldman Sachs.
Goldman Sachs, indeed. Very good. Mr. Smith decided to let his bosses know he was leaving by publishing this op-ed in the Times. He said all Goldman Sachs cared about was making money. He also expressed shock and dismay that fish swam and birds flew. He said that the company only cares about profits. What did he think Goldman Sachs would be interested in, making artisanal cheeses? So people who don't like Wall Street reacted to this by saying, I told you so, and Wall Street Insider said that, you know, Mr. Smith was disgruntled because he didn't get the bonus or promotion he deserved. And axe murderers were upset because they were all hoping for a career in finance. It's like, why are we disqualified? We have that can-kill attitude, so important in today's market. This is our favorite thing. In his op-ed, Mr. Smith listed his achievements so as to make himself more credible. And one of them was, quote, winning a bronze medal for table tennis at the Maccabiah Games in Israel, known as the Jewish Olympics, unquote. Yeah. That, of course, stopped the critics in their tracks. They were going to impugn his credibility. But wait, this guy beat a bunch of Jews at ping pong. This, basically, he has the same unimpeachable character as my Uncle Morty.
A bronze.
You get a bronze. Yeah. He was the third best Jewish ping pong player. Well,
in the world.
Well, he lost to your Uncle Morty in the semis, apparently.
All right, Gay, here's your last quote.
This has nothing to do with Wikipedia or Google.
That was the head of a pretty famous publishing company that's no longer going to publish their famous set of volumes. Mm. What's finally going out of print after 244 years?
Oh, that's Britannica.
Yeah, the Encyclopedia Britannica. Very good, yes. If you don't understand why it's a big deal that we'll no longer be able to buy a whole shelf of leather-bound encyclopedias for more than $1,000 a set, go find your parents and ask them to ask their parents to find a Ouija board to commune with their grandparents, and they'll tell you. Of course, despite what the head of the company said, it has everything to do with Wikipedia. If you don't believe me, go to a library and wait for a teenager to pull down, you know, a bound volume of the encyclopedia and watch them try to find a recap of last night's episode of Glee. People have not looked carefully enough into the ramifications of this move. For example, without big expensive rows of bound encyclopedias, what are personal injury lawyers going to sit in front of in their TV commercials? What are we going to put, without those bookcases, what are we going to put in front of the secret doors to our underground lairs? And you cannot hide your drug stash in a hollowed out flash drive. So
there are no real phone books anymore either, are they? I haven't seen a phone book in years. So what are muscle men going to tear apart?
It's true.
Tear apart cell phones or something.
Actually, this is a little sad for people of our age, because these encyclopedias were what we used to write our first, you know, reports in grade school. That's how we learned the minimum number of words you had to change so it wasn't plagiarism. Carl, how did Gay do in our quiz?
Gay, you had 3 correct answers, so I'll be doing the message on your home answering machine or voicemail.
Well done, Gay.
Good job, Gay.
Thanks so much. Thank you, Gay. Take care.
Bye.
We want to remind everybody that they can join us most weeks back at our home at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago. For tickets and more information, you can go to WBEZ.org. You can find it on our website, which is waitwait.npr.org. Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about the week's news. Charlie, the city of Trenton, New Jersey, was gripped by a crisis this week. If it had not been resolved at the last minute, no city buildings would have had any what?
Calamari.
No.
I don't know. No city... water.
No. Even more important.
Air.
No.
I'm going to need a hint on this one, Peter.
It would have just been bare cardboard tubes everywhere.
Oh, they ran out of toilet paper?
The city of Trenton ran out of toilet paper. Oh. Almost.
What, do they only get like one delivery a month?
Apparently, no. What happened was that the city council had repeatedly rejected a contract with Trenton's paper product provider. Ooh. And supplies were running dangerously low in city facilities. Fortunately, the city made an emergency purchase of toilet paper, which is, when you think about it, that's probably what the phrase emergency purchase was invented for. Anyway, everybody in Trenton is happy. They won't be moving forward with a backup plan, which was to have the city firefighters open up the hydrants to create so-called power bidets.
Ooh. Oh, mercy.
When you start seeing that tube shining through, you got one layer left, you know?
Yeah.
And there's nobody, you know, you don't know anybody within miles.
You may already be a redneck.
On the other hand, I just thought of a use for those unsold Encyclopedia Britannicas. So.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Roy Blunt Jr., Faith Saley, and Charlie Pierce. And here again is your host at Centennial Hall in Tucson, Arizona, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you all so much. You're the best. But right now it is time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, my name is Nikki. I'm calling from Salt Lake City, Utah.
Hey, how are things in beautiful Salt Lake?
Pretty good.
Would you say ambivalent?
Ooh.
Sure.
Okay. Well, welcome to the show, Nikki. You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Nikki's topic?
Kiss me. I'm Irish.
St. Patrick's Day is not about getting wasted. All right, it's not just about getting wasted. It can also be used for good. Our panelists are going to read you three stories of how the Irish holiday has recently become a time to make the world a little bit better. Guess the true story. You'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine or voicemail. Ready to go?
I am.
Let's hear first from Charlie Pierce.
They don't take St. Patrick's Day lightly in that Hibernian hideout we call Las Vegas, Nevada. The one thing they won't abide is jaywalking and careless driving because they want everybody crossing the street to be alive when they get there to lose all their money. And that apparently is especially true on the Saint's Day. They have arranged to have appropriate seasonal mythology working to guard the patrons headed toward their city's multi-leveled pots of gold along the strip. This Saturday, members of the Las Vegas Police Department will work traffic control dressed as leprechauns. The wee folk will be stationed at various intersections, and they will ticket both drivers and jaywalkers. The fines can total up to $190. It is important for pedestrians to pay attention, although why people in leprechaun suits would draw the attention of anyone who's already in Las Vegas is beyond me. Also, do not attempt to go after their lucky charms. They'll shoot to kill.
The Las Vegas police pretending to be leprechauns scampering about in the crosswalks to increase pedestrian safety. That's from Charlie Pierce. Your next story of the pluck of the Irish comes from Faith Saley.
Not wearing green this St. Patrick's Day? Lois Goodman will fix that in a pinch. No, she really will. She will pinch you hard because she's on a mission to save lives. Last year, on March 17th, Lois, a 59-year-old who loves St. Patrick's Day so much that she calls herself, quote, a St. Patty's fanatic, boarded her regular Cincinnati bus to head to work. Wearing her usual holiday getup, green boa, green leprechaun hat, and a t-shirt that says, Aaron, go braless, she handed out homemade shamrocks to other passengers who weren't wearing green. Lois repeatedly tried to offer the blue-uniformed bus driver a shamrock, but got no response. I thought it was pretty rude he didn't even answer me when I was just trying to spread some cheer, remembers Lois. Seeing no other recourse, she gave him a significant pinch just as he swerved into another lane of traffic. Turns out the driver had fallen asleep at the wheel, and Lois's lucky pinch made him wake up and scream in pain and save the lives of all 67 passengers aboard the bus. Now Lois pinches non-green wearing Grinches every chance she gets and suggests others do the same. Some may find it annoying, she admits, but I call it Irish consciousness raising.
Pinching to save lives in Cincinnati on St. Patrick's Day. And your last story of a St. Patty's problem solver comes from Roy Blunt, Jr.
St. Patrick's Day in Killarney, Wisconsin, has for many years featured a pageant depicting how that saint banished all the snakes from Ireland. This year, the town is out to exorcise reptiles for real. Killarney, a bedroom community outside Oshkosh, isn't plagued by serpents, but by a plethora of Japanese spotted toads, which began as a high school science project and has ballooned into a civic crisis. In a press conference this week, Killarney Mayor Carl Diesendorf, in character as this year's honorary St. Patrick, spoke as follows. Bedad, if these warty little blackguards haven't invaded our homes, our shops, and our places of worship, and divil the dog or exterminator man can dislodge the little spalpeens. But let's see the buggers withstand the force of Gaelic music now. 'Tis this very weekend we'll be parading up and down Killarney's every street and byway, blasting away with all traditional instruments. We'll have them little gobs of Satan river dancing into the gloaming. Sure, and it's a darling scheme, and another Guinness all around.
So, here, Nikki, are your choices from Charlie, police dressing as leprechauns to dance about gaily in the pedestrian crosswalk so as to attract the attention of drivers. From Faith, a woman in Cincinnati who will pinch everybody who's not wearing green just to make sure they're awake. Or from Roy, Killarney, Wisconsin, getting rid of the plague of Japanese frogs with Irish music. Which of these is the real story for the St. Patrick's Day weekend?
Wow. Those all sound pretty festive.
They are.
I think I'm going to have to go with Faith's story.
Faith's story of the woman who saved a busload of passengers by pinching a man for not wearing green. And is going to do it again. Is that your choice?
That's my choice.
All right, then. Your choice is Faith's story. We actually spoke to the person at the very center of this story.
I dressed up as a leprechaun, and what we expected to happen was drivers to actually stop for the leprechaun. And if they didn't and they drove by me, had friends waiting down the street that would give them tickets for not yielding to the pedestrian.
That was Officer Michael Lemley of the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department. I, the leprechaun himself. So I'm sorry, but obviously the true story was the one told by Charlie. However, you have earned a point for Faith for her very charming story of the luck of the Irish.
Thanks, Nikki.
So thanks for playing, Nikki.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Not from me, don't take me daughter from me, for if you do I will torment you, and off the dead me ghost will haunt you, love, fare thee well. With me to the idle doodle amada, me to the idle doodle amada, mayor expert or a laddie, oh, this whiskey in the jar. Hey, whiskey, you're the devil, you're leading me astray. Over...
And now the game where we invite on interesting people and try to hold their interest. Some people call Calexico an Americana band. Some call them Tex-Mex. We call them awesome. Guitarist and vocalist Joey Burns of the band joins us now. Joey Burns, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hello, Peter.
Great to have you.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor. I love the show.
Well, we love your music. So you, if I'm not mistaken, grew up on the hard streets of Southern California.
I sure did.
Scrabbling for everything you could get.
You know
it. It's tough. It's tough. And you came here to Tucson when?
In 1993.
Right. And how, what brought you here?
Music.
Music. You heard the music.
Heard the music.
Coming over the hills.
Was playing music with musicians that were coming this way.
Right.
And we
came
settled.
And why, I guess, is my question.
It's very comfortable here for musicians and artists alike. You know, it's low rent. There's lots of inspiration.
Right. Well, tell the audience about Tucson, because I've been to Phoenix and I've been to Tucson, and Tucson is different. Tucson is pointedly not Phoenix. I'm proud of that.
Tucson is just that much closer to the Sonoran. It is in the Sonoran Desert, and I think that is a big factor here, right?
Right.
It's beautiful. the culture here, the history here is really remarkable, and it influences us in many ways, especially musicians.
Right. And for 6 months of the year, it's too hot to do anything but lie around like you're on a rock. So, sun yourself.
Under the rock.
Under the rock. Just hide from the heat.
Do you sound better in dry air than in the wet?
You know, that's a really good question.
Oh, really?
Jesus. Yeah. That's a good question.
Good job, Roy.
Yeah.
That's a really good question. I haven't found out yet.
It just doesn't have a really good answer. Yeah.
How do you... We listen to the music, and when we've heard so many descriptions of it, we don't know what's right. We've heard it called Americana, roots rock, Tex-Mex, meaning you have a lot of cheese melted over you.
Mm-hmm.
We've heard desert noir. Have you heard that?
Of course.
What is desert noir?
That was penned by Fred Mills, who's living in North Carolina, and he's a writer that lived here for a while. And he came up with this term. You know, I think the edginess of some of our music, the kind of the Cormac McCarthy influence in some of the lyrics, and he came up with this desert noir.
Right. Cormac McCarthy?
Yeah, yeah.
Is that why you have so many songs about killing Mexican drug dealers? Is that?
Yeah. Or winding up, killed by one.
Yeah, that's more likely, I guess. Calexico is a name of a border town in California.
It is, yes.
So why did you, but you're in Tucson, so why didn't you call yourself Tucson?
That's a good question. coming from California and having an influence, having lived here in Tucson for a number of years, and driving from Tucson to the West Coast, we'd always pass the town of Calexico, and it just kind of stood out, and of course on the other side of the border is the town Mexicali. I mean, in some ways, it's kind of a humorous name to have these two border towns with...
Calexico, Mexicali.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
I just got that.
You just got that.
I'm like, oh, I see. So it's like if you take the first half of one name and say, My whole life just snapped into focus now that I finally figured out what that means. One of the things, I mean, we've described all these descriptions of you. I don't know if any of them are adequate because your band mixes all these genres of music. You're throwing in folk music and indigenous music and pop music. And are there any genres that you couldn't mix? Could you write like a good country smooth jazz song, for example? Like something that Kenny G would sing if his wife left him.
Say. Oh, wow. That would be really tough.
Yeah.
That would be really tough. But it would be fun to try.
Right. We read an interview where you cited an influence for your Carried to Dust album. You cited the magazine The Economist.
Mm-hmm. Exciting, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's great because it's little known, but Justin Bieber's first record is influenced by Foreign Affairs magazine.
Yeah.
So I think that you were...
They were just trying to get the gig at South by GA.
How does the magazine The Economist influence your music?
Oh, just the news that you don't usually hear on the daily newspapers or you read in the daily newspapers.
Right. So that
it's those long transatlantic flights.
Right. Mm. And that leads to your great love song, Oh Baby, I Want to Give You a Microloan.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Your song was in Collateral, the movie, Michael Mann movie, and you actually were in it. You played yourselves playing your own music.
Wow.
Yeah, that was fun.
It's a good movie. Isn't the scene where Tom Cruise eventually goes into this club and kills a bunch of guys?
No, he sends Jamie Foxx in to impersonate him.
Oh, right. To impersonate I remember that scene. Yeah. Jamie Foxx, who's playing a cab driver, has to pretend to be the heartless assassin.
Yes.
And you guys are in the background?
We are, amongst several other musicians and artists, songs that they're possibly going to use for the same scene, so we just kind of shifted.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So, like, they were shooting the scene, and, like, we don't know what song we're going to use, and now we're going to shoot the scene with you guys standing in the background.
Uh-huh. Right.
And then they got rid of you. And
we just went to the back.
And they brought in another band to stand in front and pretend to play their song.
Yes. And the hardest part was being on stage and pretending like you're playing and moving along to the music, but not making a single sound.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and
you can't,
all the dancers, too.
So the dancers have to... So you're pretending to play music, but not making any sound.
Right.
And the dancers are dancing. They're actually dancing, but there's no music playing.
You have to be really quiet.
Wow.
We ought to do this show like that sometimes.
All right, Joey Burns, we've invited you here to play a game that this time we are calling...
Baby.
So here we are in Tucson, the southern desert. This is where you make your music. We assume mostly you write songs about how it's a dry heat. We thought we'd ask you questions about music from places where it's really, really cold. answer two questions about cold music correctly, you'll win our prize, Carl's voice on the voicemail for one of our listeners. Carl, who is Joey Burns playing for?
He's playing for Kira and Mike Zolkowski of Tucson, Arizona.
All right, Kira. Kira and Mike, fine couple, I'm sure. Here in Tucson, so you ready to do this?
I am.
First question. Up in Greenland, the indigenous people there play their music on some unique instruments, including which of these? A, walrus tusk xylophones, B, polar bear bladder drums, or C, halibut trumpets.
Mm. Wow. Trumpets?
Yeah.
The brass section of Greenland High School marching bands must be something.
Yeah. You hollow the halibut out, you've blown its lips, you move the tail to bend the note. That makes sense.
I've always wondered what the sound of Greenland is while flying over there. I'm going to go with B.
You're going to go with B, the polar bear bladder drums?
It sounds like a good...
All the native Greenlanders are going, yes, that's right, you are right, it's polar bear bladder drums.
Hey. Good job.
They also made a drum that was a polar bear bladder stretched over a drum frame. You beat on the drum frame with a stick. No idea how they convinced the polar bear to part with its bladder. Ask nicely. Next question. Over in Finland, the native people there play a kind of music called yoik music, but it's performed in various styles, including which of these? A, the mumbling style, B, the dance beat style, C, the monotonous style.
Well, I like the idea of the monotonous style.
Mm.
I mean, it just sounds good, doesn't it? Monotonous, because then, you know, that's a way of saying that it's just kind of droning, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I love drone music.
Mm. Drone music doesn't even have to have anybody
piloting it. Yeah.
Monotonous. See.
That's it.
No, it's actually mumbling.
It is mumbling.
Mumbling style.
Okay.
Basically, it's used in shamanic chants and basically sounds like REM.
One of my favorite mumblers.
Absolutely. Last question. The Yukon Gold Rush led to some great music up there on the Alaskan frontier, including which of these songs? A, there are so many moose here, but none of them are you. B, we'll be happy when the ice worms nest again. Or C, so hungry I ate the bear that was eating me.
Wow. Oof. Man.
One of those was a real song sung on the Yukon frontier during the Gold Rush.
I'm going to go with B.
You're going to go with B. We'll be happy when the ice worms nest again.
Mm-hmm.
You're right.
Hey.
How did you know? Here is a sample of that classic ditty.
In the land of the pale blue snow, where it's 99 below, and the polar bears are roaming o'er the plain.
All together now!
In the shadow of the pole, I will clasp her to my soul. We'll be happy when the ice worm nests again.
There you go. Music of the Yukon. Carl, how did Joey do in our quiz?
Well, Joey had two correct answers, and that's good enough to win for Kira and Mike Zolkowski.
Well done. Calexico's box set Road Atlas is out now. Joey Burns, thank you.
Thank you so much
for joining us here. Wait, don't tell me.
Joey Burns.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, say it's all right. I won't forget all the times I waited. Just what you used to do.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Charlie Pierce, Faith Saley, and Roy Blunt, Jr. And here again is your host at Centennial Hall in Tucson, Arizona, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thanks, all of you. In just a minute, Carl stars in the new film from the Coen brothers, Rhyming Arizona. A little local tribute for you there. It's our listener limerick challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call. 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Roy, hockey's got them. Baseball's got them. Now, brawls in the audience have made it to a new venue. What?
Brawls in the audience have made it to a new venue?
Yeah.
Opera.
Close. I'll give it to you. The Symphony. The Symphony happened in Chicago. Audience members at the Chicago Symphony Orchestra were shocked last Thursday when out of nowhere something interesting happened. According to one symphony goer who sounded exactly like you'd expect him to, quote, "We heard a rather loud thump." Two patrons in the elite seats had started throwing punches. Either it was that old early versus late Bach debate, or the men had misinterpreted what the term box seats means. The audience was appalled. Many of them even woke up.
Peter, may I tell a story that's apropos?
You may, Charlie.
3 years ago, I had the honor of reading The Night Before Christmas with the Boston Pops.
Oh, wow.
So I came out, and you're on Symphony Hall, and this enormous orchestra behind you, and I'm scared to death, and I'm standing behind the podium, and I know I'm going to say Blitzen wrong and swear or something and never be invited back again. So I sit there, and they're behind me, and all of a sudden, the guy in front of me just belts the guy in the next chair. And the guy belts him in the next chair. The guy goes down, he picks up the chair and goes after the other guy. I told the conductor, I'm not working this bucket of blood again.
That was terrible.
I'm going back to the roadhouse where it's safe. Until you guys put up the chicken wire right here, I'm not doing it.
Okay, there you go.
So it's not unprecedented.
Yeah.
Roy, it's a rite of passage these days for celebrities to release a signature scent. Justin Bieber, Katy Perry, they're all hawking perfumes. This week we learned of another who has joined that roster. Who?
It's a real celebrity, one of the biggest celebrities in the world. I happen to know the answer to this. It is the Pope.
It is Pope Benedict the 16th. Yes. Italian perfumer Silvano Casoli creates perfumes for both Madonna and Sting, so it seemed natural that she would be the one chosen to create a fragrance for another famous gay icon. But unlike your average celebrity scent, this perfume is meant for the Pope's use only. Casoli says the perfume's infused with some of the Pontiff's favorite things, lemon, fresh spring grass, tree blossoms, and anything that covers up the smell of old guy. Like I said, it's only for his use, but we're hoping, Vatican had some trouble recently. They may need some income. Maybe he'll sell it. Can you imagine the glossy TV ads for the Pope's perfume? A room with white billowing curtains, a gorgeous model sweeps into view, her gown swirling along her long leg. She whispers, "I'm wearing Pope."
Well, the reason they can't sell it, Peter, is the only way you can make it work is if there's a little priest following behind you with a little thing burning.
Yes. Maybe he's going to create like a Pope product empire. He can sell jeans. Nothing gets between me and my Benedicts. How about breakfast cereal? Frosted mini popes. He can be in the ad, It's like, hey, let's give this cereal to Popey. Popey condemns everything. Oh, look, Popey likes it. Charlie, according to a study published in Science magazine, if male fruit flies are unable to mate, they do what instead?
Weep sadly into their drinks.
Exactly right. They go get drunk. This explains why fruit fly bartenders have to hear so many sob stories.
You know what's really pathetic is when you see the fruit fly trying to push F3 on the jukebox so we can listen to Sinatra. He just can't make the little feet work.
Scientists discovered this. I'm sorry. What is like a fruit fly's torch song in the wee small hours of the one morning I get to live? Scientists did this. They divided the male fruit flies into two groups. One of them got to mate with females. The others were prevented from getting lucky. Then they gave both groups a choice of foods, and the frustrated boy flies picked food that had been spiked with alcohol consistently. Scientists explain this phenomenon. They say that alcohol can stimulate the same reward centers in the brain as sex does. That's true for fruit flies and people. Then, even more eerie, the male fruit flies then kept buying alcohol-spiked foods for the female fruit flies in the hopes that the females would lower their standards.
Wow.
And you know that drosophila always looked better at closing time.
I know, terrible. One One of the fruit flies ate so much alcohol-spiked food stuff that it woke up the next morning next to a moth. It was like, oh. It's like, oh, my God, he's lying there with the moths. He's like,
I don't even know its genus. What am I going to do?
I know. I'll call her. I'll tell her I'll call her this week, and I'll be dead long before then.
Let's go all the way tonight. No regrets, just love. We can dance until we die. You and I will be young forever. You make me feel like I'm living a dream.
Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows back at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, and you can check out the latest How to Do Everything podcast. This week, Mike and Ian tell you how to dye your favorite large body of water green for St. Patty's Day. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. This is Steve Sheldon from Roseburg, Oregon.
Hey, where's Roseburg? I don't know it.
About 70 miles south of Eugene.
Okay. And what do you do there?
I'm an elementary school teacher.
That is tough work. That is tough work.
It's great.
It's rewarding?
Yeah, it's a great job.
Fifth grade is a good time. That's just before they start to go insane.
It really is. Yeah.
I know.
As a matter of fact, we're in the middle of a human development unit, so I'm beginning to see the signs of the insanity.
The signs of the madness. Well, welcome to the show, Steve. Now, Carl Castle is going to read for you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly, on two of the limericks, you'll be a winner. Here's your first limerick.
In bikinis, I'm posing for just cash. Now, the pictures use might make my trust crash. They zoomed on my face. On that lips-to-nose space, the feature they show is my...
Mustache.
Mustache, yes! So, you're an aspiring fashion model. You finally land a big job. You're going for the shoot. And 6 years later, you find out that you are the face of the Sally Hansen brand of mustache bleach cream. This week, that classic good news, hairy news scenario came true for a model named Maria Asanova. She really should have known something was up at the time of the shoot when the photographer was like, great, great, honey, give me sexy, come on, give me happy. Okay, give me Wilford Brimley, come on. Here is your next limerick.
Crying babies on planes are uncanny. Can't be stowed in an overhead cranny. When everyone's stressed, we'll help fix the mess. We'll hook you folks up with a...
nanny.
Yes! The one exception to the unconditional love that we parents show our children is, of course, when we have to fly with them. That's why there is now a service called Nanny in the Clouds. It's a new company, and it's the worst job in the world. For a plane ticket and just $20 an hour, your nanny will sit with your screaming children on the plane while you sit several rows away telling everyone around you, my God, I'm never having kids. Here. I would do that so quickly. There is no amount of money. Here is your last limerick.
On my chick, the hawk swoops like a comet, so some reflux from mom will embalm it. For hawks stay away from bird stomach spray. They won't eat a chick drenched in...
I thought one of the words was vomit. Is vomit the answer?
Vomit is the answer, yes. Vomit is, as it is so often, the answer. An amazing discovery this week from the world of ornithology. One little bird, the Eurasian roller vomit bird.
Huh.
Has evolved the ability to protect itself from predators by suddenly vomiting upon itself, making itself unappetizing.
Ooh.
It's useful, but still, you imagine the bird at the bird convention. The peacock's like saying, well, I've got this fantastic plume of feathers to attract mates. And the mockingbird's like, well, I'm really good at singing. And they look at the little Eurasian roller vomit bird, and they're saying, so, what do you do? Carl, how did Steve do?
Steve, you had three correct answers, so you win our prize.
Well done. Thank you, Steve. Thanks so much for playing. Now it's time to move on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players now has 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill in the blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Faith Saley has the lead, Peter. She has 4 points. Charlie Pierce has 3. Roy Brunt Jr. has 2.
All right. So, Roy, you're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question, fill in the blank. On Thursday, President Hamid Karzai asked the U.S. to withdraw its troops from villages in blank and confine them to bases.
Afghanistan.
Right. As part of President Obama's re-election campaign on Thursday, blank blasted Republicans in a speech to Ohio auto workers.
Vice President Joe Biden.
Yes. A 30-minute video calling for the arrest of Ugandan warlord blank was viewed by over 79 million people this week.
Kony.
Oh. A thief in Sweden was arrested after a short chase when he attempted to hide in a blank.
Baby buggy.
In a police station on Tuesday, 25-year-old Dallas CV became the youngest musher ever to win the blank.
Iditarod.
Yes. The CBS sitcom The Big Bang Theory announced this week that British physicist blank would appear in an episode in April.
Oh, what's his name? Sir something.
Yes. Stephen Hawking is
Hawking,
his
name. Stephen Hawking.
In a tough blow to the Pittsburgh Power Arena football team just hours before the first game of the season, the owner blanked.
The owner, the Pittsburgh whatever's, announced sell the arena with them in it.
Hours before the game, the owner of the Pittsburgh Power Arena football team took the entire team to Olive Garden and fired them during dinner.
Wow.
The Olive Garden?
Yes. Team owner Matt Shaner took the team to the Olive Garden
and said,
when you're here, you're family. Also, when you're here, you're fired.
You know what? If I were going to get fired at a restaurant, I would want there to be a bottomless salad bowl there.
Just to dive into it.
Just to catch my tears.
Carl, how did Roy do in our quiz?
Roy had 3 correct answers for 6 more points. He now has 8 points, and Roy has taken the
Very well done. All right. Charlie Pierce, you are up next. The clock will start with the first question. On Wednesday night, the White House hosted a formal dinner for visiting Prime Minister blank.
David Cameron.
Right. Just over a year after it was hit with a devastating tsunami, a 6.8 earthquake was reported in blank.
Japan.
Right. Former News International executive Rebecca Brooks was arrested Tuesday for a second time in connection with a blank scandal.
Phone hacking.
Right. An earthquake that caused some damage along the Washington Mall last August has left the blank 2 millimeters shorter.
The Washington Monument.
Yes. Police were called to the scene of a fight that began when a Denver woman assaulted her boyfriend with a blank.
A sausage.
A Justin Bieber doll. Customers converged on Apple stores on Friday as the new blank was finally released.
The iPad.
Right. On Thursday, the Department of Agriculture said that school districts will be able to decide themselves whether meat with pink slime will be in their blank.
Cafeteria menus.
Yeah, and their school lunches. Yeah. California woman was surprised to find a woman in Facebook's People You May Know box was blank.
Her husband.
No, the woman was also married to her husband.
Oh.
Facebook showed its sense of humor this week when it suggested to bigamist Alan O'Neill's 2 wives that they friend each other. Why not? I mean, when you think about it, somebody you may know, well, that would include the person who's married to your husband. Of course you might know them. You have a husband in common. She didn't know who this woman was, and she clicked on her profile, and up popped this woman in her wedding pictures featuring her husband. So it was a little confusing.
One mutual friend.
Yes, exactly. Carl, how did Charlie do in our quiz?
Charlie had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. Charlie has 15 points and the lead.
How many then?
That's not going to be enough.
I don't know.
How many then does Faith need to win?
6 correct answers.
Right. All right, Faith, this is for the game. In an interview with Fox News this week, Mitt Romney said that President Obama was to blame for high blank prices.
Gas prices.
Right. Early Thursday afternoon, former Illinois Governor blank arrived at a federal prison in Colorado to begin his 14-year prison sentence.
Blagojevich.
Right. On Monday, Yahoo filed a lawsuit accusing social networking site blank of infringing on its patents.
Facebook?
Yes. On Tuesday, the White House announced that Michelle Obama would lead the U.S. delegation to the opening ceremonies for the blank.
Olympics.
Right. After critics said they were trivializing President Abraham Lincoln's death, the Gettysburg Museum and Visitors Center stopped selling blank.
John Wilkes Booth bobblehead dolls.
You are so correct. This week, presidential candidate Rick Santorum said that if Puerto Rico wants to become a state, it should blank.
Speak English.
Absolutely. after actor John Hamm called her an idiot in a magazine interview. Professional celebrity blank fired back on Twitter.
Kim Kardashian.
Yes, Switzerland's new privacy protection laws became controversial this week when, to comply with the law, the media had to blank.
Get naked.
No. To comply with privacy laws, they had to blur the face of a suspected bank robber on a wanted poster. Police had a photo of the robber holding a gun and a sack of cash, so they released the photo to the media in hopes of getting a tip from the public, but since they didn't know who he was, they couldn't get him to sign a release allowing his photo to be used, so the blurry-faced photo was released instead. So far, the only tips that have come in have been from people desperately in need of new glasses. Oh, I recognize that guy. I see him every day. Carl, did Faith do well enough to win? She did really well.
She needed 6 correct answers. Faith had 7 correct answers.
Oh, my God.
Oh. 15 points. Faith Saley is this week's champion.
After the big Goldman Sachs public resignation this week, we're going to ask our panelists to predict the next big public resignation. By whom? But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the National Association of Realtors, an advocate for homeownership. More at houselogic.com/homeownership. CSX, whose trains move a ton of freight, nearly 500 miles on just 1 gallon of fuel, to help reduce fuel consumption. CSX, how tomorrow moves. And Progressive Insurance with Snapshot, which monitors mileage and safe driving habits to determine a personalized rate. Learn more at progressive.com. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, Benevolent Overlord, and Desert Rose. Philip Goedeker writes our limericks. Our intern is Kate Casey. Our web guru is Beth Novi. BJ Litterman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Waltrover and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. Our senior producer is Ian Chillog. Our executive producer here at Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mr. Michael Frisbee Danforth. Now, panel, who will the next big public resignation be from? Roy Blunt Jr.
Siri, but not... Do you think there's just one Siri? No. There are thousands of Siris. How could this one Siri do all that work? She's quitting because she says most of the other girls just want to meet early adopting guys.
Faith Saley.
In light of the news that Goldman Sachs calls its clients Muppets, Kermit the Frog will angrily resign because he feels like his bankers don't take him seriously.
And Charlie Pierce.
Actually, Peter, Jesus left an angry epistle at the Vatican saying, I'm resigning as Savior and going back to carpentry. That Santorum guy can speak for himself.
And if any of that happens, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Girl Council. Thanks also to Charlie Pierce, Faith Saley, Roy Blunt Jr. Thanks to the staff and crew at Centennial Hall at the University of Arizona. Thanks to this wonderful crowd here in Tucson, Arizona. Thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sagal. We will see you next week. This is NPR.